Welcome to episode 10 of the Unrest Podcast. I'm Caitlin Stansel.
I'm Madeline Green.
And I'm Carter Coyle. Thanks for joining us today, y'all. How's it going? So I want to kick off with some breaking news. Caitlin Stansel has been adopted by a kitty cat.
Oh, well, just for a night and a day.
It still counts. I'm the crazy cat lady of the group. And I was super thrilled when my husband was like, oh my gosh, Caitlin got a cat. And then I looked on, I was like, not exactly. She was adopted temporarily by a cat. What happened?
Well, first of all, I love that Nick alerted you to that.
Oh yeah. He's my Facebook alert system.
And then second of all, it was on Sunday night. I was coming home from work, and on Sundays I work really late. So it was like midnight by the time I got home. And this cat was just standing in the middle of our cul-de-sac looking so scraggly and scrawny. And I was like, oh, just ignore it. But then when I got on my car, it like ran over.
This was a really cute white Persian cat that looked like it'd seen some stuff, but it was not like some stray tabby scrapping in the woods or something. You know what I mean?
He looks like, he reminds me of Crookshanks, Hermione's cat in Harry Potter.
Yes.
Yeah. He was very cute, but he was kind of odd. He, like I said, he was very skinny, so it seemed like he had been on his own for a while. And I thought it was a girl basically the whole time. And it had ear infections. Its hair was super matted. And it was just like very dirty. Yeah.
How long had he been away from his family?
She said only 3 days.
Liar!
That cat had never been out that long, I'm guessing, because it looked like in rough shape for 3 days.
What was its name again?
Mr. Ripley.
Well, we wanted you to keep it, but your fiance was not about that at all. So we were, I know, I was like, just pretend like you forgot about it. It's still in the garage. Just don't talk about it. He'll get used to it. It'll be fine.
He'd be like, when are you going to post the pictures? And I'm like, well, I want to go to PetSmart and like get this little comb to fix its hair so it'll look good in its photo when I post it on Facebook to find the owner. I was like, I'm trying to like clean its fur a little so it doesn't look so grimy.
So but that picture was after you
cleaned it up?
Yes. Yes.
Lord have mercy. Mr. Ripley.
Mr. Yeah. Ripley. Well,
Mr. Ripley has not been taken care of.
So we did find the owners, which was awesome. Like within 15 minutes of posting on Facebook his photo, my neighbor across the street, she added my post to this Facebook group. And someone said, this lady's been looking for a cat that sounds just like that. And it was his owner. And she lives just around the corner. So Mr. Ripley wasn't too far from home.
Now, did she have proof that it was her cat?
Yes. Her descriptions of all of his oddball ways were very spot on. So she told me he's special needs, which makes a lot of sense now. Because he wouldn't jump on anything. And I was like, oh, maybe it's just because he's like really old and he's just like really scrawny and he's been on his own. But she said that like, I guess at one time his two back feet had been broken or something. So I just think he's like, you know, kind of sore. And then he would use the litter box sometimes, but then other times he would just randomly poop in the middle of the floor.
Yeah.
And here's she was your sign. Like, yeah, he sometimes will just like poop in his food. I was like, oh, okay.
What? I've never heard of that.
And she said he looks all crazy and scraggly because he will sometimes, they have like a wood fence around their backyard, and sometimes he'll get out of the dog door and go back there, but he's declawed in the front and he doesn't jump, so like he's never really gotten out before, but her grandkids were over and she thinks that they maybe like left the gate open or something. So I was like, okay, yeah, this sounds like your cat.
Yeah, there's no denying it at that point. I mean, she knew his name was Mr. Ripley.
I don't know.
And
that's a
well,
good
and she was like, yeah, we have to, she was like, I just gave him a bath when he got out too. And That's probably why his fur was so dirty, because he likes to roll in the dirt.
You did your good deed for the week, at least, because I have lost my cat before for a few days, and it's just the most amazing thing to get them back. So you are a good person.
Thank you. AJ was like, what are we going to do with it? Like, take it to the shelter? And I was like, no, they already have too many cats there. They'll put him to sleep.
I would have taken him for sure. No lie. Me and Mr. Ripley would have had a long life together.
I could tell he definitely belonged to someone, because he would just like fall to pieces in your arms. Like he was just laying on his back in my lap as I was like brushing out his little hair mats and stuff. He was very sweet.
Aww. We look alike.
Okay, maybe
grumpy.
Grumpy. Nick says it looked like Grumpy Cat.
It did. I loved it. Gosh, I loved it.
The newest ultrasound of the baby looked like Grumpy, if you guys saw that. Our baby was Grumpy Baby. The ultrasound lady was like, sometimes we can get a smile or a little laugh even, but your baby doesn't seem very happy to be poked and prodded. And it's literally looks like Grumpy Cat. It's so funny.
What day and time did you go do it, though?
It was last Wednesday in the early morning. It was like first thing in the morning.
That's probably why she was grumpy.
Mama's grumpy when she gets woken up.
And if her name's going to be Madeline, she definitely was grumpy in the morning.
That's right. We're all night owls.
Just saying.
Well, that's it today. Thanks for tuning into our cat health podcast. Next week, can ear infections be ear mites? So Madeline's been working on our story for this week, which is based in an area of North Carolina I used to kind of live near, and I'd never even heard of this. So Madeline, take it away.
So today's story is about a ghostly light phenomenon called the Brown Mountain Lights. These are a series of ghost lights that have been reported throughout the years near Brown Mountain, North Carolina, which is located in the Pisgah National Forest. You can see these lights from the Blue Ridge Parkway at mile marker 310 and 301, as well as from Brown Mountain Overlook along the North Carolina Highway 181 near Jonas Ridge, North Carolina. And on top of Table Rock, Wise Man's View. Those are both located in the Linville Gorge Wilderness. So you can see these lights from a couple different spots, and they go pretty far back in history. The first reports were from the Cherokee and Catawba Indians. Some settlers and Civil War soldiers also were known to have seen these Brown Mountain lights. So they've been around for a long time, and tons of people have witnessed these lights. There's even been an investigation done 3 times by the United States government, as well as many private groups and schools like App State who have done numerous studies on these ghost lights. And the local legend is that these lights are some sort of paranormal activity and are from these early settlers and Native Americans. One story is that there was this big battle between the Cherokee and Catawba Indians in the 1200s. And the death toll was very, very high. And so after this big battle, their wives and children and maidens went out with lanterns looking for their lost dead. And the lights are said to be those spirits with the lantern still on the hunt for the loved ones that they never got to find after this big battle between the two tribes. Literally, there are so many legends and folklore surrounding these lights that I could go on for days with the stories that I found online. And these lights aren't just stationary lights. They flicker, they move across the sky, and then sometimes they even fade down into the mountain itself, which is pretty cool. Some ideas from skeptics and scientists are that they are actually reflections off cars. These things called foxfires, which are phosphorescent lights related to the fungus of decaying wood.
Where did the fox part of that come from?
Yeah, they didn't ask me. I just read it, is really what it comes down to.
I wonder if dead man toe fungus releases light gas. Right? Like
how crazy was that story? So you need to go on our Unrest Podcast group page and see this crazy foot looking mushroom that I put on there. It was awesome.
Yeah, if you're not interested in sleeping for a couple days, it's a perfect way.
And it has a nice paint color, like nail polish color. It looks like a bronze kind of.
Oof.
On a side note, I don't know if you guys saw in the news recently, these kids out in Seattle, Washington, I think it was. There's some kind of app now that all the kids are using, and
TikTok.
No, but it's
Snapchat.
Like that. No.
Facebook.
Tinder.
That's all the old people. But it basically, it's supposed to like take you on an adventure. So it gives you like a random longitude and latitude. And these kids, they did it. They got the coordinates and they went to the location and they found this suitcase by the water. And they said it smelled really bad. And they opened it up and there was a trash bag inside. And like the smell was even worse when they opened it. So they called the cops and they found out later there was a dead body in it.
Oh my gosh. Coordinates
led them to a dead body.
So whoever killed them is who sent in that adventure, I'm guessing.
The teens were using Randonautica, an app that sends you to random selected coordinates to help you explore your city.
So it sounds like it's supposed to be random. Like how, I mean, obviously there's something going on with that.
Wow, Randonautica. Yeah.
But for this episode, we're actually talking about Brown Mountain Light.
Okay. I just wanted to bring that up because I don't even know how I got on that. There you go. Yeah,
me neither.
We went from fungus creating the lights to dead man's fungus to finding bodies in suitcases.
Yes,
bam.
True.
Bam. Bam.
And so the list kind of goes on and on of what it could possibly be, but no one has ever come up with enough evidence to actually back up their theories. There are tons of people who have seen these lights, some who have not, but have had some other type of strange occurrences on this mountain. C.W. Smith, who is in law enforcement and works for the U.S. Forest Service of Pisgah National Forest, he has actually seen these lights two separate times. So I'm going to read what he had to say. The first time was at least 15 years ago when a fellow officer and I were using binoculars to check on some forest visitors. I was gazing across the bottom up toward Table Rock and saw a different light. Not so unusual, but different in the sense that it actually wasn't supposed to be there. When I turned to ask the other officer if he had seen it, he asked at the same time, "Did you see that light?" This all took place in a matter of seconds. So I said, yeah, it's probably just an airplane or something going across. We watched it for about 2 minutes while it moved around, and then it was just gone. It was a cloudy night, and the light was like nothing we had seen before and doing a lot of dancing-like motions. The second time was 3 to 5 years later. It was a crystal clear fall night with a few other people who were watching. I was there in my law enforcement capacity watching and listening, and I saw a similar type light. It was different than the first time, but it was down underneath what we call Little Table Rock, lower in the tree line. It moved around a little bit, and then it was just gone. There was no doubt in my mind that this wasn't a lantern, it wasn't a flashlight, and it wasn't a star. All I can tell you is that it was a light, and I've probably been at this location at Wise Man's View thousands of times, and I've seen lanterns and flashlights, and I've seen lights from the city and in the distance, but I've never seen anything like this. And then check out this video from some people that have actually seen these lights. I found it on YouTube. They've done a lot of investigating of these brown lights, and so they have a lot of videos, and I thought this one was really interesting. And then it also has a cyclist who cycles these mountains regularly. He's actually not ever seen the lights, but he has felt some strange occurrences and just weird feelings while biking on this mountain, so check that out.
Ever since I was a kid, I can remember adults talking about having some sort of encounter where they see the lights, you know, floating up on the thing. I'm a cyclist, and so I ride all through the woods where folks say that the lights occur. Never seen anything, but have definitely had a few encounters that have left me with a weird feeling, a sense of something being there.
My name is Charles Braswell Jr., and I went out to the 181 Overlook around 1999, just started making regular trips. I'm thinking it was like my 35th trip before I actually saw what I thought was a brown mountain light. When this light appeared, I just got quiet, just deathly quiet. I was concentrating on capturing it and making sure that I got it on film. And it was just inspiring to see it. I'd spent so much time there looking at nothing out there in the night sky, and then suddenly this bright light shows up. It was really puzzling because I just wondered what that was. What did I just see?
I'm C.W. Smith, and I worked as a recreation technician for the U.S. Forest Service. Spent a lot of my time in the Wiseman's View area, patrolling the area where a lot of people go to look for the Brown Mountain Lights.
The Wiseman's View.
Is this your first time here?
It is. It is.
I'll tell you. Just what do you get on up here where you can see it all?
Oh, it's gorgeous.
You want to come back?
So is this where you first saw the Brown Mountain Lights?
This is the first place I ever saw them. Me and my buddies come down here responding to a call. He said, that's got to be one of them lights. And we knew the area so good by patrolling it all the time. We knew it wasn't a flashlight. We knew it wasn't a lantern. We watched it for probably 5, 10, 15 minutes. I don't know, time, you don't keep up time, those kind of things happen. And then it got up to the ridge line and just blended in with the stars and other lights you see.
It's interesting to me that some people who've like tried to see them every day for years never see them, but then visitors who aren't even expecting it, ta-da, they appear for them. So it does seem like a totally random occurrence. Otherwise you could, you know, kind of plot out, oh, when could you see these things?
Right, right. And if you are interested in seeing them, they say it is best to go on a clear day in the fall.
And that's a beautiful area to visit anyway. The Blue Ridge is known for its color, the leaves changing color during the fall. And that drive is, it'll just take your breath away. So, hey, Brown Mountain, scary lights or not, it's worth it. And then you can hope to see these ghostly appearances.
People travel up there all the time anyway, in the fall, looking at the changing leaves. And so I think it just so happens that that is the popular time to see them. And a lot of people have seen them around that time because there is so much traffic up there during the fall months.
Well, for today's Spook School, we're going to look a little deeper into kind of some of that research that Madeline alluded to, the cause of the lights, but really focus on a folk song called, creatively, Brown Mountain Lights, which is based on, you guessed it, these mysterious Blue Ridge lights. So she...
No way.
Yeah, yeah. So Madeline kind of talked about this a little bit, about how it has been formally studied before, and Wikipedia tells us that there was a former U.S. Geological Survey that began in 1922, and eventually it determined that witnesses were just misidentifying car lights and train lights, or seeing fires, or just, quote, mundane stationary lights. However, that really didn't hold up because a massive flood struck the area right after that study was finished up, and all electrical power was lost. So trains weren't able to go through for a long period of time. The automobile bridges were washed out in this big flood, and the Brown Mountain Lights continued to appear.
Blue, brown,
depends on the swamp gas.
Yep.
It also, this very interesting website, NorthCarolinaGhost.com, highly recommend for future research. It says also the swamp gas theory is kind of hobbled by the complete absence of a swamp on Brown Mountain.
Right.
So that
would make that explanation difficult.
Yeah, a little moot. They said it could be naturally occurring electrical discharge by the geological fault line below the mountain. But, you know, in my mind, that would look... I have no clue, but in my mind, I would think that would look more like the aurora borealis or something,
right?
Like, you know, by a fault line or gas. It wouldn't be like distinct single lights that look like lantern lights.
Wouldn't you see them in more mountain ranges?
Right. It wouldn't just be right there in that one area. You'd see them all over those mountains. So because of all the folklore that developed around the Brown Mountain Lights, it was natural that one theory kind of made its way into country and bluegrass songs. So the song was written by Scotty Wiseman, and it was later performed by a bunch of bluegrass type groups, the Hillmen, Kingston Trio, Country Gentlemen. And the one that I was going to play for y'all is by Lulu Bell and Scotty, because I just like the name Lulu Bell. Now, I'm going to play some parts of it. We'll evaluate, but I will forewarn you that there are some very troublesome explanations in here, including kind of the idealizing of slavery. So we'll explore that as we get there.
There's a bear and the catamount range. There are strange ghostly light can be seen every night.
So to break that verse down, ladies and gentlemen, basically they're starting by setting the stage of this folklore, and they're saying way up on old Linville Mountain, where basically it's ruled by a bear and other, a catamount? I'm thinking that's a mountain lion? I don't know.
I think so.
A strange ghostly light appears every night, which no scientist or hunter can explain. The next little section has kind of sets the scene for people traveling through in the old days in old covered wagons and camping out and looking out for the Brown Mountain Light that they'd heard about.
In the days of the old covered wagons, when they camped on the flat for the night, with the stars growing dim on the high gorge, high on the mountain, and down in the canyon below, it shines like the crown of an angel, and fades as the mist come and go.
So it's kind of, you know, describing the idea that once the mist comes and goes, or maybe the morning dawns, it goes away. Obviously, lights are seen in the dark. And it says shines like the crown of an angel. Now, this next part is where we get a little hinky, and it starts proposing one of the theories, which is that Southern plantation master and his slave were going hunting into the woods, into the mountains, and something happened and the master died, and that the lights that you see are actually the slave coming back night after night with his lantern, still loyally looking for his slave master. It's a real optimistic interpretation of how slaves would have felt about the people controlling them. But anyway, here's a listen to this, and then I'll read a little excerpt about that.
Long years ago, a southern planter came hunting in this wild land alone. And here, so they say, the hunter lost his way and never returned to his home. His trusty old slave brought a lantern and searched but in vain day and night. Now the old slave is gone, but his spirit wanders on, and the old lantern still passes by.
So the last line there of that verse, now the old slave is gone, but his spirit lingers on. So some reassuring viewpoint that even after his death, the slave was so worried about his master that he kept coming back. Well, I thought this NorthCarolinaGhost.com had a good explanation, or I guess interpretation of this. And they said the legend of the song is pretty dated, and particularly in regard to its unforgivable romanticizing of slavery. Indeed, it's easy to imagine a complete retelling of this story where the lights are from people who are looking for the slave who realized, hey, I'm alone on this mountain. I'm out of here, and hightailed it to Ohio for freedom. I like that retelling. So it just kind of goes to show you the extent that even into, 1920s and 30s, there was this romanticizing of slavery. But anywho, I think it's still interesting to see how many people remade the song, and that's how entrenched it was kind of in the mystery of the area and the folklore.
And just like how many different kind of stories people have come up with for what the lights could be caused by.
It's crazy how many stories there are about different things that these lights could be. I read one that was about a husband who killed his wife, and the lights are his wife on the mountain looking for her child.
Oh, wow.
Literally, there were a ton of different stories and legends of what the lights could be. So who really knows?
You mentioned X-Files, and it was in a 1999 episode, and they mentioned the Brown Mountain Lights, and they kind of explained them off as being aliens that were or UFOs that were responsible for missing hikers that were found dead in the area. So that's kind of cool. And then it says it was also featured in a few other like ancient alien shows and Mystery Hunters and a book. So I think it's really fun, and it sounds like a nice fall field trip for us to take the On Rest podcast on the road. So anyway, that's the Brown Mountain Light and a little bit of folklore around it. So Caitlin, tell us about our real life spook today. Who did you speak to?
So it's not connected to the Brown Mountain Lights whatsoever.
That's okay.
But my friend Stephanie Sine, who is the meteorologist I work with on the weekends at our station down here, we were just kind of talking about the podcast, and she at first was like, I don't think I've ever had an experience. But then later that night, after she was thinking about it, she was like, you know, this probably isn't like really a big deal or anything. And she started telling me this story, and you have to hear it.
Well, hello, ladies. Thanks for having me on your podcast. Love it, by the way. The Unrest podcast, fantastic. Always look forward to it. And I was talking to Caitlin recently. You know, we worked together at Live 5, and I didn't think I really had a ghost story. I think it's because when I was younger, I was always kind of told, you're just imagining it. Just ignore it, Stephanie. It's not real. Probably to just help me not be so scared, because I was always a scared kid growing up. But the more I thought about it, the more I talked about it, actually, I actually might have a situation where maybe I was hearing or kind of seeing something a little paranormal. So I'm going to go into it. I used to live in Maryland, in Hagerstown, Maryland, actually, and I worked at an old news station. And the building that the news station was at, it's now currently WDVM, and it was called WHEG News. And this building that we were in, it is old. It is very old. And it actually used to be a hotel. It's called the Alexander House, and it's now turned in to an apartment, a building actually on the other side of us. So we're kind of connected to this apartment building, apartment complex. So long story short, sorry, I'm babbling, but I worked what we call super weekends in the news business. So I worked mornings, nights, on weekends. So it came to a certain Saturday evening where I was with an NBC affiliated station. So I think we had sports or something. So we went on late at night rather than 11 o'clock, went on even later, probably closer to midnight or something like that. And it was also a spring forward, so we lost an hour of sleep. So when it all came down to it, I was only going to go home and sleep for about an hour and a half, and then I'd have to come back and do the morning news. So I was like, hey, I'm just going to sleep here at the station. We didn't have anywhere to sleep. So I actually slept under the weather desk in the studio. And so our studio was on the second level of the building, actually. And it was this old, we had an old wooden floor that was painted over 100 times and very creaky as you walked around. You know, the walls, everything was just old, because this building used to be an old hotel. It used to be the Alexander Hotel. And I'd heard rumors, I couldn't get this confirmed specifically, but I had heard rumors that the second floor was actually where they had their ballroom. So they had dances, you know, that's where everyone danced. And of course, probably a lot of socializing happened there. Once again, that's what I'd always heard. So comes to this night. I didn't even take my makeup off because I was like, hey, I'm going to be back on the air in just a few hours. So I'm going to try to just lay down under the desk. We had a little platform under our weather desk. So, and it was just big enough for me to lay down. So I brought a blanket, a pillow, and, you know, I turned the lights off in the studio. Everyone left. So no one was there during the night, you know, when I was trying to sleep. I know that for a fact, because it was a very small, small training station and not many people worked there over the weekend. So I was the only one in the building. And I was just annoyed because I knew I wasn't going to get a lot of sleep. But as the night went on, I tried to sleep and I kept hearing all of these noises, like people were walking constantly. And I knew, you know, no one was there. I tried to talk myself out of it, which is why I'm just now realizing that this possibly could have been ghost maybe or some sort of spirit. I really did, because I was more just angry at the fact that I couldn't sleep and that I had to get up in a few hours and do hours of news once again. And so I really didn't process it at the time. I was just annoyed more than anything. But when I look back and after hearing those stories, you know, that the second floor that used to be the ballroom, and that building does have quite a bit of history to it, I thought, I was like, hey, I think that it was actually something not just in my head, but I definitely think I was hearing maybe some old spirits dancing around, keeping me awake. And there's a good reason why that area of the building is not full of beds and apartments, because I'm sure folks wouldn't be able to sleep anyways. So, you know, I got up normal time. I really didn't sleep that much. I maybe got, you know, a few minutes of just napping in. But then I got up and, you know, did my work day on that Sunday morning as usual. But I do think maybe something spooky was lingering. And that building still creeps me out to this day. Even before that happened, the building creeps me out. So, a little weird story for you.
Wow, that is very spooky. And I imagine that any newsroom that is mixed up with what, like old hotels and possibly mental patients, that's something's going to happen there.
And something else cool that she told me is that separate from her news station, she wanted to ask her parents and her sister if they've ever had experiences, and all three of them have seen a recently deceased relative on the day of their funeral. Just as
an what? Example.
Yeah. Yeah. Her mom told her that they were driving to, I think it, she said it was her cousin's husband's funeral. He was like in a construction accident or something. And she remembers looking in the rearview mirror and he was in the back seat behind her. And she looked away for a split second and then he was gone.
What the heck?
Yeah. And then her dad, it was the day of the funeral for his grandmother, I believe. He was younger. He had like, you know how everyone goes over to the family's house after the funeral and you eat and kind of gather together.
Yeah, that's what you do.
You talk about the person. So he went upstairs to use the bathroom and he looked in her bedroom and she was laying on her bed after she had already been buried.
Whoa.
It's kind of interesting. Like Stephanie has never had that experience, but her mom, dad, and sister all have.
Interesting. Thanks for sharing, Stephanie. And if you have a cool real life spook to share, we'd love to hear from you, our listeners too. So just email us. It's super easy. theunrestpodcast@gmail.com.
Or you can give us a call at 843-564-2101. Again, that number 843-564-2101.
Or again, if you do have one, you can always do what Ben and Hollis did and join us on Zoom in person. That was really fun and we really enjoyed it. So if you have one and you want to tell us in person, we can do that as well.
Virtually in person.
Well, y'all have a great week. Thanks for tuning in and we'll be back next Monday.
Unrest in peace.